Sairam, and a warm good evening from Prashant and Ilyam. It's a beautiful Thursday. It's about 7:30 p.m., which means it's time for Radio Sai Answering Booth. I'm Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and the host of this show, where I invite questions from you and we seek answers together from Swami's message. I have an interesting question today, as always, quite a general one though, but hopefully we will learn something more or refresh what we have already heard from Swami through the answer. But before we get to the answer, it's time for the quote for the week. Well, I didn't have one last time, but I do have one today. The quote I'm going to read out today is by the English musician and visual artist Brian Eno. It's a beautiful quote, and I'm quite excited about sharing it with all of you. So here it comes. I quote, "Control and surrender have to be kept in balance. That's what surfers do. Take control of the situation and then be carried, then take control. In the last few thousand years, we've become incredibly adept technically. We've treasured the controlling part of ourselves and neglected the surrendering part." End of quote. Isn't that such a beautiful quote and a very profound comparison? I've said this multiple times on the show before. If there is one word in which we can summarize the idea of practical spirituality in entirety, the word is balance. And here he speaks about one of the most important balances that brings together controlling and letting go. And what a brilliant analogy. A surfer always rides a wave. He doesn't change the wave, modify it, control it, or even subdue it. He lets the wave take him up, down, and ahead. In that sense, he has given himself up to the dynamics of the wave. But if a novice like me were to be in the same place, in the same situation, I would only be tossed up and down mercilessly and would look nothing more than a scene of pity, isn't it? To be able to ride a wave like a charm, one has to have perfect control over one's own self, one's posture and one's body. When a surfer has such control, then he can let the wave do the rest. The whole challenge is to have such control over oneself that when one enters the wave doesn't look at you as an adversary, but carries you as part of the wave itself. And that is exactly what we are supposed to do in our life too. All the disciplines, spiritual activities and efforts that we do is to know ourselves and gain control over ourselves. Once we do that, we can ride destiny or what life throws at us. We can be on top of the game, really. Then we will actually surrender to the wishes of Swami with such an adventurous thrill that ups and downs will not throw us off balance, but will only add to the excitement of the journey. So there are three things we must learn through the spiritual quest of ours: to master ourselves, to learn to surrender and let go, and finally, the fine balance between what to control and what to let go. The other aspect of the quote is about the idea of modern times. With progress of science and technology, we've progressed in this art of controlling things around us enormously. We control the weather around, we control the air we breathe, we fly, we swim. We have so much more control over the elements around, and we are focusing all our energies in gaining more and more control. But we must also learn the art of letting go. And that we can learn only with the confidence that there is a greater force, a wise providence that guides the course of all our lives. Only with the conviction that there does exist a master, a lord, who loves, who cares, who knows what is best, and who is in absolute control. And having had the opportunity to know Swami, if we do not master the art of letting go, it would certainly be such a pity, isn't it? So before we head to the question, dear listeners, permit me to read that beautiful quote by Brian Eno one more time. I quote, "Control and surrender have to be kept in balance. That's what surfers do. Take control of the situation, then be carried, then take control. In the last few thousand years, we've become incredibly adept technically. We've treasured the controlling part of ourselves and neglected the surrendering part." So let's head to the question that we have for this week. The question is from Sister Lalita, and she's been very kind to send the question in her own voice, and she's very beautifully and clearly articulated it for us. So I'll play the question in Sister Lalita's voice, and we'll listen to the question, and we'll see what answer we can come up with. As I said, it's a general question, so I'm sure it's going to be applicable to all of us. So let's listen to the question.
Sai Ram, Divine Brother Prem, I have a question. Regular listening, also reading of divine discourses, Radio Sai discussions, study circles, as well as some inspiring talks by other revered masters, Sai bhajans and so on, are very inspiring and soak me in the spiritual realm and Sai world amidst daily routine and work commitments. But before I can catch up with time to do some solid mananam, the day ends and I sleep. I feel lost lot of times as to what exactly I have gathered or understood after so much of listening or reading with some contemplation. Am I submerged in just spiritual entertainment? What is the change that has come within me is not perceptible. Mind questions why you are not solely God-driven. Goal of self-realization seems distant. Please guide, based on Swami's guidance, how to imbibe Swami's messages for total self-transformation so that it reflects naturally in my thought, words and actions, and I become steadfast with undivided attention on self-realization. Thank you, Sai Ram.
So that was a question, and as I said, it was a very beautiful, profound question. The only problem is, I don't think there's anything new to say, because that question, probably the answer to that is whatever we've been speaking on the Radio Sai answering booth, because it's all about how do we internalize or how do we make Swami's message manifest in our lives. That last question that you asked about how to imbibe Swami's message for total self-transformation, I think all of what we've been speaking of in different situations that we are put in life is about that. But of course, there are some very beautiful aspects to the question. And in general, I think there are three distinct parts to that question. One, of course, is about spending a lot of time in listening, in reading, in intaking some of the spiritual content, but not having enough time for the mananam aspect or thinking about it and recapitulating it in our own, to our own self. That is one of the distinct aspects of that question. And the other thing is about feeling lost, whether we are engaging with the spiritual content in the right manner. Are we taking it too casually, as you beautifully worded it? Are we submerged in merely spiritual entertainment, or are we seeing some change within us? So the other aspect, of course, is about, are we making progress in that sense? Well, I will not be answering the three questions, of course. I'm sorry, the third part of that question is about how do we bring about the transformation and ensure that Swami's message reflects in our life. As I said, that was the general part of the question, which probably the answer to it is the entire answering booth show, the 100 episodes that we've done. These are three aspects to that question, and I'm not going to go sequentially in that sense, but we'll talk about the questions, the points that have been raised, and we'll see overall if we are able to give a complete understanding to the question and the listener who's given us this beautiful question. Swami says that we have to do Shravanam, Mananam and Nididhyasanam, right? That's one of the most important things that Swami would often say. And in fact, we had an entire series, two seasons of a series on this topic of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. And whenever Swami would speak about his discourses, Swami would often say that you have to do this process. And you know, this is the only way in which the spiritual message actually becomes internal. You listen, you recapitulate, and you ensure it becomes a part of yourself, or you let the absorption take place. Apart from this, Swami also says that the purification of the mind through the karma or the duty is another aspect which adds to the Shravanam Mananam. You know, one of it is, of course, you listen, you read, and you engage with spiritual literature. But the other aspect is about the mind being purified through the activities that we do, be it the satkarmas or the dharma that we are supposed to discharge in our everyday life. So what do we do when we do not have enough time for mananam, given that mananam is such an important aspect of this whole process? You're supposed to listen, read, and spend time in reflecting upon what you have gathered through your senses, right? That's what the aspect of mananam is. And when that is so important, what do we do when we do not have enough time for that? First of all, as I just mentioned a couple of seconds ago, even the actions that we perform as our duties or what we discharge as our dharma, all of that also plays a very important role. And Swami would say that that process only sets off the transformation of the mind, or what leads to what Swami would call chitta shuddhi. The purification of the mind happens when we take to discharging our duties, whether within the family or within our workspace or whatever the role that we have been assigned in life, right? So it is not to take away the importance of that work that we do in that sense. Even though you say that we are a spiritual aspirant and, you know, I'm reading spiritual literature, I do not have time for doing mananam. You spending time and doing activity which has been assigned to you as your role, whether within the family or otherwise, is as much important for the spiritual progress as Shravanam and Mananam is, right? That's the point I'm trying to make. And without that Chitta Shuddhi, there is no progress in the spiritual state that can be got. So if you feel that I'm not able to find time for Mananam, all I'm saying is, if that time is being taken away by the duties that you have to perform, be sure that that is as much a spiritual activity as mananam is, right? That's the first point that I wanted to make. So doing that activity, whatever you're supposed to do, mindfully, and as Swami would say, with an attitude of dedication, is itself one of the most important spiritual exercises that is not to be looked down upon, not to be taken away. So please don't think that because of doing such work, you do not have time for spirituality. That is as much spirituality as reading, listening, and recapitulating is. Now, coming to the idea that you are listening and reading so much, and at the end of the day, you find that you're left with very little time to contemplate on what you've heard and or what you've read or what you've discussed, whatever is the way by which you've gathered this spiritual content. One thing to remember is the Shravanam aspect of it and the Mananam aspect of it, both of it together constitute sadhana, or the spiritual activity that we do. The sadhana that is related to the external interactions is what we refer to as Shravanam. Though the word Shravanam itself means listening, actually, as we have mentioned many times before, any kind of intake through the senses can be also referred to as Shravanam. So be it reading, you're listening, or you're watching something, or you participating in a discussion and gaining something through a study circle. All of that external activity which is spiritual can be called as Shravanam. And Mananam is that aspect of sadhana which you do with yourself, by yourself, without any external interaction, right? So both Shravanam and Mananam is a form of sadhana. Now, this sadhana of listening, reading, what we refer to as Shravanam, has two distinct roles as I see it, and that's what I'm going to be talking about now. This sadhana of listening and reading, and when attending study circles, all of that, you know, it is a form by which we intake material into the mind. And as Swami would very beautifully say in Hindi, you would say, Jaisa an, vaisa man, you would say. That is, the kind of input that you take into your mind is what will come out from the mind, is what you will be thinking. What goes inside will reflect in the way you think, and the way you think will reflect in the way you speak and act, right? So that again becomes a very, very important part of the spiritual process itself, as even Gautama Buddha would say, you know, samyak vak, samyak drishti, samyak vachanam, because all of that also forms a way by which you intake material into the mind. So if what we hear and see is literally junk and tinsel, that's what our mind will be preoccupied with, right? So that's one of the main reasons why we read and listen to spiritual content. So the food which goes inside the mind is always something which is elevated and spiritual, so that when the mind starts thinking, that is what will be available for the mind to think, right? But as you said, after that, there must be a period of mananam, at least a certain amount of reflection should be there, and at least some action must be inspired by that mananam which takes place. And in fact, I think I would not be wrong in saying that some of the action that we perform also comes under mananam, right? Nididhyasanam is a state where Swami says, whatever you have heard and whatever you have listened has become so much a part of you that it's a natural, it becomes your nature, right? That spiritual idea becomes your nature. That is what is referred to as Nididhyasanam, where there is complete absorption of whatever has been heard. So in that sense, mananam is not only merely thinking about what you've heard, but also trying to act based on what you've learned and what you've heard. So that aspect of self-reflection and trying to consciously bring it into action is also a part of mananam, right? And this whole process of ensuring the right things go into your mind, the reflection happening, and the actions being performed, this whole process is what is referred to by the four statements, which I think I've out of at least three or four times quoted on this entire show, where Swami would say, Tyaja Durjana Samsargam, Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam, Kuru Punya Maho Ratram, Bhaja Nitya Anityatam. Right? Swami would say that these are the four important steps a spiritual aspirant should preoccupy oneself with. The first step is, it's like putting a filter at the inlet to the mind itself. You're ensuring that only the right things go inside. And when we keep doing good acts, Kuru Punya Mahuratra means keep doing good actions constantly, right? That's what it means. And when we keep doing good acts and contemplating on what has been taken in through the external senses, and also at the same time doing this mananam of what is real and what is unreal, what is true, what is ephemeral, and what is eternal. Right? This is the whole process of these four steps. Dhyaja Durjana Samsargam, Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam, Kuru Punya Mahoratram, and Bhaja Nitya Anityatam. So this, the first two, Tyaja Durjana Samsargam and Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam, is keep away from bad company and have good company, is nothing but ensuring that the right kind of shravanam is being done. The right kind of literature is read, the right kind of company is kept, so that you listen to the right kind of things, you discuss the right kind of things, right? That is what it is when you say that you're putting a filter at what enters into your mind. And then, as I said, the action that we perform is also part of the mananam. So you do the mananam and also act as much as possible based on what you have gathered through your reading and listening. And Bhaja Nitya Anityatam is another aspect. We'll probably come to that later, which in a way defines the way a spiritual aspirant must engage in his mind when alone, right? We'll come to that later. Now, this process, this whole process of what goes inside, what you think about, and how you act, and then what is the discrimination process that happens, this is actually a long time process. This is a long drawn process. It is not something which happens in one moment, right? It's almost like a lifelong process. And just to explain a little more of what is the importance of this process, this is one of the most important things that we have to keep in mind. What makes us want to intake something that is wrong or something that is base in nature, right? Why do we want to read or listen to something which is not advisable in that sense, what Swami would not call as sattvic? Why do we want to engage with that content in the first place? Swami says it's because of the past vasanas that we have, the many lifetimes which we've led, we gather all kinds of filth in our mind, and that's what guides our actions, that defines our taste, that defines the kind of company that we tend to go towards, the kind of ambitions that we have and all of that, right? And Swami would say that it is like the water in the overhead tank. If the overhead tank is filled with dirty water, so the same dirty water is going to come out through the taps, the showers and the faucets. Similarly, when the vasanas and the thoughts in the mind are not pure, what comes out through as words, as actions and as our decision making, all of that will be influenced by that. And when the thoughts are noble, what comes out through words and actions will also be noble in that sense. So Swami says, this is the long process that you need to go through. First of all, putting a filter into the inlet. As I said, the first two statements of avoid bad company and have good company is like putting a filter to ensure that no more bad water starts filling into this overhead tank. What water comes into this overhead tank, which fills it up, you ensure that it is pure, first of all. Then the good deeds that we do, Kuru Punya Mahuratram, as I said, it's like almost like putting a filter within the tank to ensure only good water comes out, right? Now, just imagine a setup in which for every 5 liters of good water that comes out, let's say 1 liter of the good water goes back into the tank, right? Just imagine a contraption like that. What will happen if you set up a system like this? You're ensuring good water goes into the tank. You're ensuring even though the tank might be dirty, you've put a filter so that only the good comes out, which is nothing but what Swami would say as following the dictum of watch, where you constantly watch the kind of words you speak, what's the kind of actions that you do, you watch the kind of decisions that you take. So even though if there is unpleasant thoughts in your mind, you ensure what you do is right thing. It's like putting a filter at the point of expression, right? And every time you do the right thing, every time there is an impulse to do something wrong, but you resist and you do a right thing, Swami says that also adds to the vasana. And that's why I said, imagine for every 5 liters of water which comes out, there's 1 liter which is going back into this overhead tank. So if we were to manage to set up something like this, what will eventually happen is all the bad water starts getting flushed out in that sense, and the overhead tank is going to be replaced by the pure water. And this is the whole process that these 4 steps in the spiritual aspirant's life is meant to achieve, right? The point so is that this is a long process, and shravanam, or listening or reading or discussing or whatever it is one of the steps in this entire process. And it is one of the roles that listening to spiritual discourses or reading spiritual literature is meant to play, right? So it is one aspect in an entire mechanism. And this desire to progress spiritually is itself a desire that Swami says occurs when this process has happened for many, many lifetimes, right? Swami would often say this desire to progress spiritually, this desire for moksha, this desire for liberation, that itself comes after an enormous amount of sublimation of the vasanas. So if today you are asking this question of, you know, what should I do to progress towards my spiritual liberation, or what should I do to progress faster towards my goal, that desire itself comes because this process has been gone through many, many lifetimes and your vasanas have been purified to a great extent, right? So this idea itself comes after this whole process had gone through. So such shravanam and satsangam, or good company and reading, ensures that the entry which goes into the mind is purified, which, as I said, is only one part of this entire mechanism, right? Now, what is the other role? As I said, this is one of the roles that shravanam plays in our spiritual quest. What is the other role that this sadhana of listening or reading plays in our life? And of course, this can be said in general about all the sadhanas that we do. Such shravanam, reading or keeping good company, is also meant for the for the idea of sanctifying that very moment, right? It is not only for something in the future that we are going to gain. As I said, it is a part of the process, and this process could be even over lifetimes. But we don't do Shravanam only for that purpose, so that you know, this process is going to kick off, and then after a few years I'm going to gain in this manner, and you know, my vasanas are going to get purified. No, that is of course there, but sadhana is also performed with one of the most important aspects of sadhana is to sanctify the present moment. One is to filter what comes into the mind, the other is to make that moment complete and sanctified by itself, right? And sometimes this aspect of sadhana also becomes very, very important. In fact, performing sadhana with this attitude, that this sadhana that I'm doing or this listening that I'm doing is ensuring that this moment is sanctified, could well be one of the best ways of performing the sadhana itself, right? Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that you should not ask yourself this question of, I'm doing all the sadhana, what is the whole point? That is not wrong. In fact, Swami himself says many, many times in his discourses, Swami says that you have to ask yourself this question, what is the change that has come in me? I've done, you know, I've been coming to discourses for so long, I've been attending bhajans for so long, what is the change in me? Swami has many, many times said that that is a question that we have to preoccupy ourselves with. I'm not saying that is wrong, but I'm talking about another aspect as to what sadhana is for, which is at that moment when the sadhana is performed, you don't let yourself indulge in any other bad activity, right? It fills that moment of your life, and doing that, and that way it sanctifies that moment. And doing sadhana without thinking, how will I gain and how will I progress by doing this sadhana, without that thought, if you're able to perform your spiritual activity, that is one of the perfect ways of performing the sadhana itself. For that matter, any action, be it normal karma or be it the duties that we perform or the sadhana that we do, which is also another form of a karma that we perform, all of this, as Swami has told us many times before, is best performed, is best delivered when it is done just with the perfection of that moment in mind, and not worrying about what is it going to bring to us or what is it going to result in, right? In fact, in I think one of Swami's Vahinis, if I'm not wrong, it is Sandeha Nivarani, where Swami says, this is of course, he's talking in the context of meditation, where Swami writes as though the devotee is asking him about, how do I ensure that I'm progressing when I'm meditating over a period of many, many years, right? And Swami makes this point very beautifully. He says, you know, don't worry about the stage that you are in. All that you have to do when you are into this sadhana or meditation, which as I said, can be applied to any other meditation, is to occupy yourself with perfecting your sadhana in that moment. Don't worry about which stage you are in, which, you know, whether you're making progress or how far you have come or how far you are from the goal. Swami says, don't worry about all of that. You must only focus on perfecting the sadhana in that moment. And because Swami, in that particular context, Swami was saying, how many of these people would have quote unquote spiritual experiences and spiritual visions. And Swami writes it in such a beautiful manner, where the devotee is asking Swami, what about those people who have visions in their meditation? They have visions of different deities. And Swami was saying that, see, most of that is delusional. Nothing like that happens. And nothing like that is an indication of the fact that you're progressing on the path. If at all you've taken to the path of meditation, if at all there's anything that shows you that you are progressing, it is only calmness of the mind and the ability to focus and concentrate on something. Nothing else. It's not the visions that you get. It's not some kind of a warm feeling that you get when you're meditating. Swami said there's nothing like that. Don't go by all of that. All of that is hogwash. It doesn't show any kind of progress. Well, that's a different thing. So the point I'm making is, no sadhana performed sincerely will ever go waste, because doing that sadhana sincerely sanctifies that moment. Whether it brings you result thereafter, whether it is setting off this whole process that I spoke about sometime back, whether it does all of that or not, if sadhana is done perfectly, be it listening, be it reading, when you're engaging in that, if you give your mind completely to that and you are listening to that, first of all, it does not allow you to do anything else at that moment. It engages you completely. And when any sadhana, for that matter, is done perfectly in that moment, it sanctifies that moment. And that is, in fact, the best way to perform any sadhana that we are doing. So from what I've explained about the two aspects of sadhana, especially the sadhana of shravanam, or listening and reading, we keep ourselves engaged in such listening so that we don't spend or waste time in any other counterproductive activity, right? That's one of the most important things that this process does. But after a certain point, we all will reach a state, we must be reaching that state, where we don't need this external sadhana as much as we needed it before to ensure that time is not wasted. In other words, you will find that whenever you have little time, your mind will effortlessly start engaging in spiritual inquiry or mananam, right? I hope you're able to see the connection that I'm making. When we engage with listening to the right kind of things, reading the right kind of things, one of the things that we are doing is we are ensuring that the time that we have in our disposal is spent in doing good activity, and we don't do anything else at that time. We don't engage in anything more mundane at that time. And because the content which goes into the mind is spiritual, the thinking process also tends to revolve around what we have listened and what we have read, right? But a stage comes when we don't necessarily need this external sadhana to ensure that we don't waste time in vain pursuits, in that sense. Where whenever you find time, whenever you are given a little bit of time, or you're left alone, you're in solitude, you would find that very, very effortlessly your mind starts doing this process of self-inquiry or thinking about what you've heard or what you've read. This process will happen. That is a sign that your dependence on this external sadhana is actually much lesser than it was sometime back. And Swami very clearly says that the reading of spiritual texts and listening to discourses is not necessarily mandatory for spiritual realization, right? Swami makes this point so very clearly, because it is nothing like only when I have heard so many Upanishads, or only when I have mastered so many spiritual texts, I am eligible for spiritual progress. Swami says there's nothing like that. And Swami would often say this, that if you're thirsty, to quench your thirst, you don't have to drink the entire river. All that you need is one glass of water from the river. Same is the case with our spiritual progress too. It's not like we need to read all the texts, and we need to listen to all the 900 or 1000 or 2000 discourses of Swami to be able to progress forward. The reason why we are engaging with so much of content is so that that first two processes which I spoke about, Tyajadulchana Samsargam and Bhajasadhu Samagamam, that filter that we place in front of our mind to ensure that what goes inside is the right thing. But when we start doing this mananam, whether or not we are reading anything, honestly speaking, Swami would often say this, all that you need is only to listen to one discourse. And all that you need is actually, if one of the devotees was once telling, if we are really earnest in our spiritual quest, just that one word which Swami says of Divyatma Swarupulara or Prema Swarupulara should be good enough for us, you know, for us to make this entire journey and reach our destination, because that itself contains all that Swami is wanting us to say. If we were to just ruminate on that one appellation which Swami uses of Prema Swarupulara or Divyatma Swarupulara, that should be good enough, right? So why are we listening to so many things? Why do we have to listen to the entire Thursday Live program or come back and keep listening to all our talks? It's only because we ensure that we engage as much time as we have in such activity so that it's not lost in any other activity. And this will lead to the mananam aspect, right? And this is exactly what Swami had told one of the devotees once, that, you know, when you are doing sadhana, slowly the sadhanas such as reading, namasmarana or japam or dhyanam, that has to be slowly reduced and it has to be replaced with this self-inquiry aspect, where you do more of this mananam, right? You do lesser and lesser of these external sadhana and do more and more of this internal sadhana, which means less of shravanam and more of mananam, right? And you said that you wonder if you're indulging in spiritual entertainment and whether you're gaining something out of it. Not necessarily, but sometimes it does happen that we get fixated with some of these external sadhanas that, you know, I do japam so many times, and Swami would be very, very strict about bringing such things to our attention, that we can get carried away by some of these things that we do, that I always attend all these discourses, and Swami would make fun of even the students for that, that you people sit in front of me and you know, you don't take your eyes off me all through when I'm giving a discourse, but actually it doesn't get into you so much, right? So that is a question that we really need to ask. How much of listening do we really require, and are we processing all of that we have listened? As you ask that question, it's a very important question that we all need to ask ourselves. So if you feel that when left alone, right, when you have a little bit of free time, when there's nothing to bother you, very, very naturally and automatically, if your mind starts engaging in the mananam of spiritual ideas, whatever you've read and listened, need not necessarily be during that day, which you might have read even a few years ago. Automatically, if you're starting to analyze within your mind, I think that is a clear sign that you actually can start reducing this external sadhana and start engaging more in this internal sadhana of self-inquiry and mananam that can be done, right? But if you feel at any point that the mananam is not happening, and if left alone, you're again drifting back into mundane thoughts and you're thinking about, you know, what is the thing I have to do next, or you're thinking about some of the past you have gone through, you're thinking about your family and all of that, that again is a sign that probably you need a little more of external support, you need a little more of the content which comes from outside to engage your mind in such kind of thoughts. So that is something which, that is why Swami would say the guru is actually internal. It is only the earnestness that we have within which can guide us as to whether we are ready for the progress, or even when we think that we are ready for the progress, if we sense that, you know, there is a little bit of, you know, lacking in us, we can step back and we can retrace our steps and, you know, redo that step again of having more support from outside. In fact, Swami says in the Jnanavahini, where he speaks about there's a very beautiful part where he speaks about the seven steps to attaining Jivan Mukti, right? Swami would call that the seven bhumikas, the seven aspects or the seven steps in the process, or seven processes, however you want to look at it, in this path to attain Jivan Mukti. In that, Swami would say the first three are most important for aspirants like us, because that is about the most rudimentary idea of engaging with spiritual content. And Swami would say that the first three are Shubhecha, Vicharana and Tanumanasi, right? These are the three words that Swami uses. And in that, this first step of Shubhecha is this idea that I want to reach the goal, this craving that I want to get liberated, right? Swami would say that is the first step. This idea that I want to reach something, I want to get there, right? That is the most important aspect which drives the entire spiritual progress. So Swami would say that when that Shraddha is there, or when that earnestness to attain nothing but the ultimate is there, Swami says that you will automatically be in a better position to look at yourself in a very detached manner and say, okay, am I really progressing, or am I lacking in something? You know, now I'm thinking too much about my past, and now I'm thinking too much about unnecessary things. Let me read more, or let me listen more, and that way I'll ensure that the content which goes into my mind is spiritual, right? So that Shubhecha is the very important first step, that we should have nothing but the ultimate in our goal. If we do not do that, Swami says that we will be replacing our cravings for worldly achievements with cravings for spiritual achievements, by saying that, you know, now I'm a spiritual person, I spend much of my time reading spiritual books, I do much of my time meditating, or I spend a lot of my time doing seva. That is why if we are driven by this idea that I don't want anything lesser than the ultimate, that Shubhecha should be there, if that is there, you will catch yourself slipping in these things, you will catch yourself when you are doing this mistake of replacing, as you said, as we beautifully said, if we start engaging in spiritual entertainment or trying to become proud by the spiritual activities that we do. And that is why Swami says that Shubhecha then is followed by Vicharana or self-inquiry. If that Shubhecha itself is not there, the Vicharana will not happen. And of course, the third step, probably there's not much to talk about it in this context, but Swami refers to a state of Tanu Manasi. The word Tanu means it's a thread, and Tanu Manasi means the mind becomes thread-like. It becomes as thin as a thread, where only as much as needed is retained of the mind, where, you know, much of the mind is occupied purely by the spiritual mananam that you do, and you just have that little bit of mind to ensure that you are able to perform the duties that are entrusted to you, right? So that aspect of, we should always set our goal on nothing but the ultimate, right? And as long as our goal is only the ultimate, we will ensure that we don't settle for anything much lesser. And in a sense that what you said was absolutely right, that it is most important, the second step is that of mananam, right? That is why it is not wrong in you asking that I don't have this time for doing this mananam. And that is why if you feel that you do not have time, and if you feel that you are listening to and reading to much, much more than what you can contemplate, you can try this out. You can try listening to lesser of spiritual content, reading of lesser spiritual content, and doing more of this. As I said, Swami was explaining this to that devotee by saying that, you know, earlier you did 75% of all these sadhana, and once in a while 25% when you had time, when you used to do silent sitting, you used to do the self-inquiry. Now as you progress, you should change this content and change this proportion to be 50% of external sadhana and 50% of self-inquiry. And as you further progress, it should be 25% of these kind of sadhana and 75% of self-inquiry, right? So this is one thing that you can try out practically and see if by reducing the kind of reading and listening that you do, are you still able to contemplate on the right kind of spiritual thoughts and ideas that Swami would want us to do. If it doesn't happen, you can always go back to reading a little more. And it really doesn't matter. As I said, if you're going to spend your whole day reading and listening, if you do not have time for mananam, it is okay. In that sense, you at least ensure that you are sanctifying the time that you spend in listening and reading. Yes, mananam is very, very important. And more than mananam, the idea of doing based on mananam, which is the next part which I'll be talking about, that the third question that you asked, which was a very general one, what must one do to have undivided focus on the goal and, more importantly, imbibe Swami's message for self-transformation? How do you go about doing that? Well, that is practical spirituality, right? That is what, I could be ostentatious enough to say that, this whole program is about. When you're put in different situations, when you're put in a situation of a crisis in your family, when you're put in situations of a crisis in your career, or you have some internal conflict, or you're having some problem in your spiritual path, all that we have to do in all of these situations, what I keep saying on this program is to ask ourselves, what would Swami expect us to do when in this situation? That is what it is, right? That is the mananam that we have to do, right? If you want a concise version of what Swami actually wants us to do, what is the code of conduct that Swami wants us to do, I found this very interesting chapter in the Sandeha Nivarani where Swami speaks about the title of the chapter itself is 46 points of code of conduct or something like that, where Swami says, I will give you in a concise form what Swami expects of you. And if you go and read that, you will not be surprised because there's nothing new in that, because that is probably a beautiful summary of what Swami has been telling in all his discourses. Where Swami says that you should have love towards all beings, you should be able to see Swami in all, you should always speak the truth, you should never find a need to stray away from truth, and there should not be running after sense pleasures, the feeling of compassion and the feeling of sympathy towards those who are suffering, the feeling of genuine joy when somebody is doing well in life and somebody is progressing or having success, the idea of forgiveness, mindful action and all of this, which is nothing new because this is what Swami keeps saying, right? In short, it's a compilation of what Swami expects of us. And Swami says that all that is to be done really in that sense is nothing but practice, right? So Swami would say that, see, this is what all of this is what you have to do. And as I said, one aspect of mananam is also acting based on what you have heard and what you have contemplated upon. That acting part also becomes a part of the mananam concept of the spiritual path, right? So constantly ask yourself in every situation, you know, this is what I've heard from Swami. This is what Swami expects of us. And everything becomes an opportunity to practice something that you have learned. And that is why life is going to be the greatest teacher in that sense, the greatest trainer for us once we ensure that we have read the right kind of things. The process of life itself is going to put us through this situation where we're going to be able to practice all of this, right? So every situation that life throws at us is nothing but an opportunity to practice, right? When we face success in life, it's an opportunity to practice humility. When we face failure in life, it's an opportunity to practice equanimity. When there is pain, physical pain, it's an opportunity to practice detachment or lesser body consciousness. When there is fear, it's an opportunity to practice surrender. So you will look at every opportunity that life throws. If there's an unpleasant person coming to you, the way you react, that is an opportunity to practice something which Swami has taught us. And Swami says that the same God who resides in everybody's heart resides in you. Are we able to practice that when the person in front of us is such a nasty person that he very successfully clouds the divinity within him? Are we able to practice seeing God in him? And in fact, there's 46 points. One of the things which Swami says is there is love in every person, and that love is divine, right? Like the bhajan that we sing, Prem Ishwar Hai. There is love in each person, and that love is divine. Swami says, can you interact only with that love aspect of each person that you come across? It's certainly not easy. It's really a challenge, right? So Swami says you do nothing but you practice, you practice, you practice, and you see that every aspect of life is nothing more than an opportunity to practice whatever you have read, you have listened, right? So when you ask, how do we engage with Swami's message so that it leads to self-transformation, this is the only way, right? And that's precisely what Lord Krishna tells Arjuna when Arjuna asks, you know, how do I ensure that this mind is molded into the kind that helps one in the spiritual progress? How do I control the mind, right? That's the whole, the crux of the spiritual question that Krishna is asked by Arjuna. And what does Krishna says? He says, Abhyasa and Vairagya. Those are the only two things that can help you. Abhyasa is practice. Whatever you've learned, whatever you've gathered as your spiritual wisdom, practice it in everyday life. And Vairagya, practice it with a certain amount of detachment. Not with the idea that, you know, this is what Swami has said, I've practiced it. Now, where is my reward? Where is my remuneration for that? Not with that idea, with a sense of detachment, right? That's what Swami was saying, that sadhana itself is perfect when done with a certain amount of detachment. I still recall a very beautiful thing, which, I mean, personally it happened once. We were writing something. I was writing something on sadhana, and I'd written this small piece about something like an analogy where there is this person who is waiting for God's grace, like all of us. We are waiting for, you know, the day when we will be able to see Swami within, or the day when we will be able to be face to face with Swami, or the day when we will be able to reach our destination. Whatever it is, we are all in this process of patiently waiting for that final moment to come. So I'd written that, you know, there's this person who's waiting for rain, who's waiting for a downpour, probably a farmer who's, you know, who's living in an arid area, he's waiting for rain. So he keeps praying and he keeps, you know, doing all kinds of worships, waiting for the rain to come. And when he's doing this, finally, after many, many years, there's a huge downpour. And what happens when there's a downpour? It rains, the water flows all over the place, and after some time, all the water drains away. And this man says that, oh my God, what a stupid thing that I did. During this period when I was waiting for the rain, I should have probably dug a well. Even as I was waiting for the rain, even as I was waiting for my prayer to manifest, maybe I should have also dug a well. If I had done that, when finally the grace came in the form of the rain, I would have been able to collect it, right? So this was one thing which I had written, and in a sense, this is what sadhana is meant to do, especially when, you know, when physically Swami was available for us, when we would be waiting for Swami to give us an opportunity to interact with Him or give us an opportunity to serve Him in some manner. This is what we would constantly engage in sadhana. It's not about simply idling away time, but you do sadhana hopefully that finally when grace comes, you know, you would have dug this well. So I used to think that sadhana is digging a well. When later I came across some discourse, something like what Swami said in that Sandeha Nivarani, where Swami said, it is a fallacy to think that sadhana is meant for some kind of a future benefit that is to be gained. Right? Swami said, sadhana is for the present moment, and sadhana is most perfectly performed when it is performed as done for right now. I will do it as perfectly as I can right now because it is for the present moment, right? Yes, sadhana does help us in the long run. As I said, it's one part in the larger process, especially these external sadhanas of reading and listening and interacting with satsang and study circles and all of that. Yes, it does play a larger role, but when performing the sadhana, Swami says you should do it with the idea that I do not seek anything from this act that I'm doing. I'm just doing it because this is the right thing to do at this moment, right? So that practice of abhyasa and this detachment of doing sadhana or doing whatever we are doing with the idea that I just want to do it perfectly for the moment, these are the two tools which will ensure that our lives become a reflection of what Swami says, right? And the answer would not be complete if I do not end with this, because Swami says this whole thing becomes so much more easier when you do all of this out of love for Swami, right? Because when you're doing something for Swami, let's say that you're attending morning Nagar Sankirtan, or you ensure that you're on time for every week's seva that is happening in your Sai Center, or whatever it is, whatever you're doing, when it is a sadhana that you're doing, it is something that is a spiritual exercise, either external or internal, be it silent sitting, meditation, whatever it is. But when you do it out of love for Swami, you are not doing it because this is going to give me something in future. You do it because doing this is my offering to Swami, right? So you're literally cutting it off from the expectations of the future. That is the greatest benefit that devotion brings. When we do anything driven by devotion, we cut the connection of that sadhana with any future benefit, or we do not think about what is it going to bring to me in future, because I'm doing it now for Swami and I'm happy doing it right now. I'm not bothered whether it's going to bring me progress in the form of spiritual elevation or going into a different stage or whatever it is. I'm doing it because doing it now in the present situation I am will make Swami happy. So if this entire thing can be driven by that love for Swami, there's no other way it can be made more perfect and made more perfect more easily in that sense. So thank you for that question, Sister Lalita. I hope I've not rambled on endlessly and left the entire question unanswered, and I've added to more of your confusion than was before. I hope there was some indication as to in which direction you can think of, and you can do your own mananam and you can come up with your own answer. As I always say, this program does not give you answers. Though we call it the answering booth, it's not a program where the answers are given to you. It's any answer can only be an indicator. It can only be a pointer. The answers have to be found only within, and the answer comes only from Swami who is within, not even from the Swami who is outside. So with that, thank you, Sister Lalita, for that question. If you have anything more, any clarifications, I would be happy to answer them. You can write to me as always. With that, dear listeners, it's time for me to wrap up this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. Well, I'm not saying that if you have any more questions, you can write to me. You can still write to me. My mail ID is prem@radiosci.org. I am not sure if I'm going to take any more questions in the immediate future, but you can always write to me if you wish that it should be discussed on the program. As I promised last week, I will keep coming back to Radio Sci Answering Booth as and when there are questions, and I wish to, if people want the answers to be aired, I would definitely be happy to come back again. But as of now, I think exhausted all the questions that I have. Nevertheless, I'll meet you again next week at 7:30 p.m. Let's see if it's going to be Radio Sci Answering Booth or something else. Till then, I'm going to leave you with an instrumental piece. This is the latest from the Radio Sci Studios. It's an instrumental piece on the beautiful bhajan Kshirabdi Shayana Narayana. It is released just today, and probably I think this is the first time we're going to play it on the radio even today. So hope you enjoy it. It should be available for download in the website, if not today, by tomorrow. Well, along with the instrumental piece, there is actually a narration. There's a beautiful story that goes along with the piece. I'm not playing the story right now. If you wish to listen to that story, you'll have to go to the website and download that. So I'm going to leave you with this. On the other side of it, you'll be joined by the Vahini Satsang team led by Bishu. That'll be the last segment for today's Thursday Live. Happy listening.